More variety.
You're listening to Para X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
It's Sunday night. Time for the hottest alternative talk radio on the planet. Welcome to Beyond the Edge Radio. Two hours of fascinating guests, mind-blowing topics, and stimulating conversation. All here on your home for the best alternative talk radio. This is Beyond the Edge Radio. Nervous? Scared? Don't be afraid. The wait will be over soon. Sit down, strap in, and hold on tight. You're about to be taken beyond the edge.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZLP 102.7 The Hog out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program, and welcome to BTE Radio. Happy Father's Day, everybody, June the 15th, and we are cruising through summer. Not officially summer, not till next weekend, but it's summer to me because it's warm outside, the sun is shining, we finally got some warm temperatures, no more snow, it's beautiful outside. And we've got a great show in store for everybody tonight, but before we get to tonight's topic, let's welcome in, as always, our co-host with the most from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions, the one and only Lon Strickler. Good evening, Lon. How you doing tonight, sir?
Hey, Eric. How you doing? How you doing, Sean? Boy, happy Father's Day to everyone.
Happy Father's Day to you.
And we're here to scare the crap out of everybody.
Happy Father's Day, my friends. We enjoyed some fun in the sun here today at House of Forker. And I'm ready to talk about things that go bump in the night.
And that would be the voice of our color commentator and our other co-host, the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. How are you, sir, tonight?
Oh, I'm great. I'm great, guys. Ready to get this show rolling.
We have a very fascinating show in store for everybody this evening, and it's one that we really haven't done before. It's kind of something new. It is a malevolent hauntings show. It's a victims and assistance show where we're going to be having haunted victims on the program tonight. I believe we're going to have a total of three guests coming on the show to discuss their encounters or experiences living in a haunted house or having a haunted experience. We'll open up the phone lines later in the program tonight and allow you, the listeners, to call in and share your experiences. And we're going to offer maybe some suggestions or tips or advice. Now, granted, we're not experts. We don't claim to be experts or professionals. We do this, you know, just as kind of like a hobby, if you will.
Using the term commentator because we're commentating on events.
Very good. But these folks that are coming on experience these things. So they have experience in dealing with malevolent hauntings, and perhaps they can offer advice or suggestions how they dealt with the hauntings and how they got through it, and maybe that'll help others out there in need. So it's going to be an interesting show tonight, guys.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. It's it is a little bit different, and in fact, two of the cases are cases that have never been disclosed to the public before. The one case, the case I actually worked on, is it's put this way: it's a poltergeist case, but it's it is not resolved yet. It's one of these things that it's just going to take some time. It's lessened than it was, but the victims of this case are very eager to tell people what they went through. So take heed what they say.
Most definitely.
Oh, yes. I mean, Lon's got some great information for us tonight. I'm going to be talking about a couple. I guess you could call them well-knowns. I didn't realize the one was a well-known until I talked to you guys tonight. So it'll be interesting to get your takes on both of these incidents that we'll be talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Before we jump into tonight's topic, which is malevolent hauntings and victims who have survived and helping those who might be going through it, we have a couple of very quick announcements to make, and they're pretty important announcements. First of all, next week on the show, Amy Perry is back, our paranormal news correspondent, is back to do the paranormal news and stories from around the world. We had such a great success back in April with Amy doing her very first show that she will be back next Sunday night with us and reporting on the paranormal news, as Lon and I will comment and make jokes and make our little color commentary on the paranormal news. And we had a great time with it, Lon. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was fun. Sure was.
Got a lot of positive feedback from the listeners, and a lot of folks really enjoyed it. Amy did a great job, and I know she'll hit it out of the park again when she comes on next Sunday to do the paranormal news with us.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's it did get a lot of comments. I mean, I was I'm not saying I was surprised, but we did get some good feedback on it.
We definitely did, and we definitely did. We do have some rather sad news to report on, and this kind of... Well, it's kind of sad for me because this gentleman was the reason I got into radio many, many years ago. The voice of Shaggy and the voice of American Top 40, Casey Kasem, passed away today. He was 82 years old, and a lot of us know Casey as being a Top 40 disc jockey and, of course, the voice of Shaggy and many other cartoon characters. But he was the inspiration for me to become a disc jockey. I used to listen to him back in the 70s and 80s doing the American Top 40 countdown, and so we want to send a fond farewell send-off to Casey, and like Dave Schrader said today, keep your feet on the ground and keep reaching for the stars, and right now Casey's on the other side reaching for something else, probably a Coke or something, but who knows. But farewell, Casey. Thanks for all the memories, and thanks for a lot of years of Top 40 countdowns. We'll miss you.
Yeah, I used to listen. God, I was listening back in the 60s, matter of fact, and... Yeah, he was always something steady.
A staple.
Staple on TV and on radio. So, yep.
Definitely.
He was a big name.
Definitely. Yeah, as some folks had commented, you know, he really played the soundtracks of our lives for a long, long time. And it's sad that he passed away, of all things, on Father's Day. You know, in the latter part of his life, he's been the subject, you know, not maybe a participant, but a subject of a heated battle between his kids and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a shame. Yeah. It's a shame that he passed, but it's a shame that he passed on such an important day to fathers everywhere, you know, to his family, and, you know, just everything they're all going through. So, I don't know, with that, maybe there can be some closure and some healing, and it's just a shame. You know, he was an important part. And, Eric, I guess a lot of people may not realize that you are an actual disc jockey. You know?
Yeah, I actually, a lot of people don't know that. I went to college for broadcasting, graduated from college. I started in 1988 when I graduated high school. I worked in four or five commercial top 40 radio stations, country radio stations, AOR, adult contemporary radio stations, AM radio stations. I actually DJed nightclubs, bars, restaurants. I was a professional DJ for about 4 or 5 years, had my own sound system. Found out you don't make much money doing it. That's why I got out, and that's why I do what I do now.
Ain't that the truth?
Yes, but I did that. And I actually, for about 3 or 4 years working in adult contemporary, played Casey Kasem's American Top 40 Countdown. So it's very ironic for me, you know, very ironic. But, yeah, it's kind of a sombering moment to look back and remember my teen years listening to Casey Kasem growing up and thinking, man, I want to do that when I get older. And then actually doing that, you know, getting out there and living my dream for a few years. So I'll always remember that fondly. Another announcement that's kind of made me a little sad, but things happen and things change. Sean, I believe you have a very important announcement you would like to make.
Well, I guess, yeah, I kind of surprised a lot of folks the, you know, other day when I announced my departure from BTE. And I guess I just explain it a little bit because it's confusing to some folks is that, you know, I came back 2 years ago. I stepped away when, you know, we found a good replacement for me in Lon Strickler. And you guys were doing a phenomenal job and asked me to be back to add a little bit of humor, which you guys know I'm always willing to participate in shenanigans. And
you do, you know, it so well.
Lend a bad joke or even a corny joke from time to time. But I guess I just never really regained my thunder and my focus and the appreciation for the things we're talking about. And with me... you know, some changes going on in my life that are personal that you guys know about, but it's not out there for everybody. You know, I just need some me time and time to regain that focus and enjoy these things that we talk about. Eric, you know me. I'm an investigator by nature. I need to be out there investigating this stuff, getting my hands dirty and getting into it. And I've lost some of that perspective. So I need to regain that a little bit. But so my full time, you know, or even my part time, because I've been part time off and on for the last couple of years. Got to step away for a little while, but I'll be back with some, you know, as needed, as a substitute or a guest host, or, you know, when you guys just need an opinion on something and you can't pay anyone else, you know.
We don't pay anyone to begin with, so.
That's right. Well, we'll just pretend. Mr. Rogers gave me a huge imagination. And I think it's just time. You guys are doing a great job. You know, we got Amy coming on who's, you know, really adding a lot to the program. And sometimes the broadcast table can be really crowded with four folks. We get lost in the shuffle. So I'm just going to be a listener and a supporter and a promoter of BTE and an occasional standby commentator.
Well, very good. We're glad that you'll stick around and kind of hang out in the wings and continue to support BTE. And we wish you the best of success with your future endeavor, Sean. And thanks for the many years of hanging out with us here and being a color commentator.
Well, it's my privilege, guys. And I've had a lot of fun. And I thank you both for being patient with me because I've not always been the most, I guess, reliable or studious sometimes. But one thing I guess I will promote, because I am a shameless promoter, is that I'm doing a project called the Forkcast, which is going to be a sporadic drop-in every once in a while. Not a scheduled show, just a sporadic, you know, maybe hour-long muse and ramblings with some of my friends. And, you know, I'll have Lon on, I'll have you on, and we'll just talk about bullcrap of all kinds and drop in just for an entertainment piece. I'm just looking to entertain folks a little bit every once in a while. You know, there are some people that I didn't realize when I left this show that are going through some serious things. Some folks are going through medical conditions, and you take these things for granted in what we do. We do it because it's a lot of fun. But there are some people that really use these shows as a form of healing or a form of relaxation and entertainment when they've got some troubling things going on. And I got a letter from one of our listeners when I was leaving that was upset that I was leaving because they've been going through some medical issues, and they listen to us when they get their treatments, and they were upset that I was leaving. So I'm going to do the Forkcast for them so they have something to do, and for everyone else who just cares to listen.
Very good. Which leads us to our last announcement, and then we're going to turn things over to you to kick off the program, Sean. Being that you're stepping away and doing what you want to do and take care of things that you need to take care of, it's opened up your position, your slot, and we, of course, want to keep that position filled because it adds so much to the program. And as you mentioned, Amy has done such a great job as our paranormal news correspondent and really stepped in and filled the hole when you were not able to be here, so to speak. She's done such a great job in filling in and doing what she's done so well. We have asked Amy if she would consider coming on board to take over the role of color commentator and co-host, and she has agreed. So beginning next week on the program, she's going to be doing her paranormal newscast. And then after that, she will become a permanent co-host, color commentator to BTE Radio. So congratulations to Amy Perry, our brand new co-host, color commentator to the show. We want to welcome her aboard. And Sean, as always, the door's open. Anytime you want to stop by, my friend, you're always welcome.
Well, I appreciate that, guys, very much. And just one thing here quick that I just found interesting. You know, Amy started at Paranormal News. And Eric, what was one of the first segments I did on Beyond the Edge Radio?
Paranormal News.
Paranormal News. So that's kind of an interesting coincidence. Some things come full circle.
They do.
Yeah.
So do. Speaking of paranormal news,
let's jump into it, shall we?
Let's jump right into it. So guys, this week we were talking, you know, Lon and I for the few months, or what can we do here on Beyond the Edge Radio to make things a little different? And sometimes, you know, we like the open mic shows, but we don't always get the participation in them. And we do topical shows very occasionally. I don't think you guys would agree we do topical shows where it's just the three of us too often. Well, today we're kind of doing a mix of an open mic show and a Well, not really an open mic. I guess they are now scheduled call-in callers. But we're going to be talking about malevolent hauntings today. And Lon, for the folks listening, why don't you fill them in on what a malevolent haunting is?
Well, basically, it's a haunting where the actual victims are experiencing physical contact, or that the activity is such that it's causing strife with the victims and their families. And that's basically what we're going to be talking about, those type of hauntings.
Yeah, Lon's going to have some real interesting stories for us here in a little bit later on. But because I've not personally investigated a lot of these malevolent hauntings, or, I had to dig deep what I thought was digging deep into some stories. A friend of ours, Sharon Lee, the Bigfoot field reporter, posted a link the other day on a haunting story out of Gary, Indiana.
This is a more recent one as well.
Yeah, it is. And I didn't realize how recent this was. And as I started reading into this, I was like, my God, there's an awful lot of stuff going on. So this is the story of Latoya Ammons. And Eric and Lon, you guys are familiar with this story.
Mm-hmm.
But for our listeners who aren't, this is a woman and I believe her three children that are being possessed and tortured and scrutinized by what they say are demonic entities. And as I've investigated this, apparently there are some pretty serious paranormal investigators on this story. I believe Zach, what's his last name?
Bagans.
Yeah, the moron from Ghost Adventures.
Zach Bagans.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of him. I'm sorry. For one thing, the safety is always the number one of my concerns, and they don't practice any of it. So they can go to heck.
I agree with you.
But I was a little skeptical on some of these things. So let's just go through some of the things that happened to these guys. Over 800 pages of official records that the one newspaper there, the Indianapolis Star, was able to get their hands on. And, folks, we're not talking about, just paranormal investigator notes. We're talking about actual documentation by the police department there. The police captain there, Charles Austin, is quoted as saying it's one of the strangest stories he's ever heard. You're talking about reports coming from Department of Child Services, Lon, psychologists, family members, and even a Catholic priest. The Catholic priest by the last name of Maginal. Is that correct, Lon? Saying his last name right? Maginal?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So some of the things that start going on in this place, and it's a I believe one floor house. In, as I said, Gary, Indiana. In November of 2001, Latoya and her family moved into a rental house. And in December, now keep in mind, Decembers are still pretty cold, even in the Midwest in most places. Their screened-in porch was swarmed with black flies, Lon.
Yeah, that's a bad sign.
despite the winter chill, and they just kept swarming, even though they were killing them. So something's, that's a sign.
Bad salami.
Bad salami. Maybe they didn't do enough garbage removal. I don't know. But that's pretty strange. They would hear creaking of the floor steps, or floorboards, footsteps around the house in the basement, creaking of the doors. It's a pretty, things that go bump in the night again. They'd hear this pretty much after midnight. But in March of the following year, there were some more interesting things that started to go on. And bear with me because I'm reading from my notes, and my notes might not always be the best handwriting. I should type. The 12-year-old granddaughter of was levitated in the air, Lon.
Mm-hmm.
Levitated in the air, and apparently these folks prayed, and the child descended with no memory of what happened. Lon, is that really common in a lot of cases?
Oh, it's not. No, it's not common. Not common at all. And in fact, of course, there's going to be comments, or people are going to call it demonic possession. I don't know if that's what it is. It's because evil, whatever it is.
You don't necessarily believe in.
No,
demons,
I don't necessarily believe in demons. I know there are entities out there that are evil, but have something just, you know, come from hell and or come from someplace that's, you know, a non-earthly entity. Well, you know, that's controversial. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think it is. But it was something. Now, you know, whatever the priest did take out of that place, you know, from what I read, I just think there very well could have been something there.
Yeah, so a little bit further into this, as you know, that first of all, they had a very hard time finding a church that would actually come in,
mm-hmm.
which isn't a surprise mm-hmm. in the 21st century. You know, the church doesn't necessarily want to be as archaic as it seems. It doesn't like to be part of some of those old-time rituals, I guess is the proper term. And, you know, they don't really want to invest a lot of time and effort into these. And you know, Lon, from being an investigator, that sometimes these things may be more of an attention-seeking than an actual event. But as you go on into this story, you know, she had clairvoyance come into the home, two clairvoyants. And, you know, again, you take that for what it's worth, because a lot of folks out there don't put a lot of stake into what clairvoyants say.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about John Edwards and Miss Cleo. We're talking about, maybe we are. Who the hell? They didn't give us the name. But, you know, they told the family their home was besieged by more than 200 demons, which is unusual because, you know, in my opinion, I was always told, not in my opinion, but to my knowledge, I was always told that there are a finite amount of demons.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what they say. But then again, you know, I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, what the hell do we know?
You know, yeah, I really don't. You know, you were talking about the priests in the Catholic Church. You know, they still do use the Catholic rites as far as the exorcisms and such, and in fact, they've increased the number of exorcist training in the United States, especially. So, you know, this is gonna. I think this is gonna be something you're gonna hear a lot more about.
So let's go on to some of the things that were actually happening in this house, Lon.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot, too.
There was a lot. You know, the kids' eyes bulged, evil smiles crossed their faces, their voice deepened, you know, which is, again, some folks take that as a sign of the possession. Now, some of the interesting things. The youngest boy at the age of 7, he would sit in a closet talking to a boy that no one else could see.
Mm-hmm.
And the other boy was describing what it felt like to be killed. Mm-hmm. And apparently the 7-year-old once flew out of a bedroom he had been in, and a headboard smacked his head into a headboard into their daughter's head, causing a wound that needed stitches. And, of course, you know, that's enough to start making child services start to
you know,
wonder what the hell's going on. And the 12-year-old daughter would later tell mental health professionals that sometimes she felt as if she were being choked and held down so she couldn't speak or move, saying she heard a voice say that she'd never see her family again and wouldn't live another 20 minutes. And some nights it was so bad, Lon, they slept at a hotel.
Yeah, I know. I know. In fact, there was an incident where one of the kids actually climbed up the wall or something like that.
Yeah, that's in here. The kid climbed up the wall. And we're talking like Spider-Man climbed up the wall. Yeah. And someone called the Department of Children's Services to investigate this lady and her children for abuse and neglect. And, you know, the case manager went to do the intake. And the hospital personnel examined LaToya and her children and found them to be healthy and free of marks or bruises. And the hospital psychiatrist evaluated them and said they were of sound mind.
Mm-hmm.
When the case manager spoke with the 7-year-old boy, the boy started growling and showing his teeth, and his eyes rolled back in his head. He would lock his hands around his older brother's throat and refuse to let go until an adult pried his hands open. So something obviously is going violently wrong here, and mm-hmm. there's no, I guess, medical explanation or psychiatrical evaluation for it at this point.
You know, I don't know. Now, are they experiencing anything in the other place they're living at? Have you heard anything?
I haven't.
Uh-huh.
I have not.
I know Zach Bagans bought this house, and I know this exorcist is actually writing a book wrote a book, and they are getting film rights for it as well. So, you know, I not that I'm condemning him for that. I mean, that doesn't mean that it wasn't true. But this, you know, to me personally, this sounded a lot like a real deep oppression, where this thing was kind of hitting everybody in the house, and had a lot of energy to it. No ifs, ands, or buts about that.
And yeah, I mean, the caseworker, Lon, her notes, you know, specifically say the 9-year-old had a weird grin and walked backward up a wall to the ceiling, and then flipped over her, landing on his feet, and never letting go of his grandmother's hand. So that is so bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, that's different. There's no doubt about that.
If one of my kids did that, I would probably cry, hunt them like a football, and leave. No, I'm kidding, because that advocates child violence, and I don't do that. But, you know, that would really creep the hell out of me. But some of those stories, Lon, you know, we talk about, because we could sit here and talk all night about this case, and we just don't have that time, even though it is a show about malevolent hauntings. But there's a lot of it on the internet that folks can go and read about.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It's something you don't hear a lot about, even lately. I mean, since the internet's so prevalent with paranormal incidents, these type of hauntings or oppressions or whatever you want to call them, it's, you know, you don't see a whole lot of it. And in fact, possessions or what people call demon possessions, but actually possessions of evil entity are not common. They're fairly rare, just like poltergeist. I mean, they're rare. So, you know, they're not as prevalent as people want to make out to be on the internet. But, yeah, this is an interesting story.
You know, and it just kind of led me when I read that to think about a case. And, Lon, you and Eric know that I've always been fascinated by the Smurl haunting, Jack and Janet Smurl. Because it's so close to where I live, you know, it's about an hour and a half away from West Pittston,
right,
Pennsylvania. And because we got to go into our break here shortly. So, Eric, just give me the sign when we're getting close. But I guess the thing about the Smurl, for folks that don't know, it was a family that had moved to a house, and they were disturbed by a demon that would make loud noises and odors. Would shake the walls, and Janet was levitated, and the husband was supposedly sexually assaulted by a succubus. No bad jokes here, folks.
Oh, you caught me. I was just about to.
And it was a really intense case, and in 1986 it was investigated by Ed and Lorraine Warren, and I know folks have a lot of you know, their own opinions on Ed and Lorraine Warren, but this case was always kind of stuck to me because they just disappeared. They didn't stick out. You know, there was a book made and a book that led to a movie, one of those Fox, I guess it was a made-for-TV movie. And they just disappeared. And today, in today's day and age where the paranormal has become so prevalent in entertainment and on the television and in the movies, you think this would be the perfect time for them to make a rebound.
Well, that's just it. You know, I don't know how much of the Smurl case was the real deal. You know, you don't, Lorraine and Ed didn't really talk a lot about it. So, you know, I don't know. It was big back then. I remember when it happened, and I don't know. It is fascinating, and it's some of the things they described were very interesting, but, you know,
Let's pick this back up after the break. Eric, you ready?
Yeah, we're going to go ahead and jump into a break, and we'll finish talking about the Smurl case, and then Lon, you have a guest that's going to be joining us to talk about her experience and the case that you worked on. So our first guest will be joining us after the break. So, folks, we invite you to keep it right where it's at. This is BTE Radio. Tonight we're talking about malevolent hauntings. We're going to be having some guests on the show that have experienced and lived through some of these hauntings. And hopefully this will bring some closure or provide some help and assistance to those who might be going through the same. This is BTE Radio. We're live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, KPGZ LP 102.7 The Hog. We'll be back after the break with more Paranormal Talk Radio. Stick right where you're at.
BTE Radio will be right back with more alternative talk radio with an attitude. Tell your mamas.
And welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7 The Hog out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. Welcome back to the show. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer tonight. And with me, as always, Lon Strickler, the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. And we're talking about malevolent hauntings on the program tonight, something we really haven't gotten too deep into. We've talked about it in the past, but tonight we've got guests joining us on the show, and they're going to be discussing their experiences with malevolent hauntings and some of the things that they've gone through. And hopefully this show will help those who are going through this situation, maybe to provide them some kind of closure or maybe some advice or suggestions how they can get through it or possibly even get rid of what they're dealing with. So before the break, we were talking about the famous Smurl case from West Pittston, Pennsylvania, that the Warrens got involved with. And, Sean, you were telling us about some of the interesting things that went on in that case.
Yeah, I mean, aside from just the, you know, normal, you know, footsteps and you know, normal things, there were some really violent situations. And I say supposedly because we weren't there. Uh-huh. You know, truth be told, you know, I was just an infant, or if even that, at the time of the Smurl haunting. And, Lon, you were still chasing Sasquatch in Sykesville, so... Eric was spinning wheels at some radio station, and we were all having a good time. Yeah. But these folks weren't. And for, you know, and I guess the reason why it's always stuck out to me, this case, is because it was my first case that I have heard of. You know, a lot of people start out with, like, Amityville. The Smurl case was brought to me because, like I said just before we went to break, it is so close to my home. And even after leaving that house on Chase Street, the entity still followed them.
Well,
it seems like one of those instances where an exorcism didn't work, because eventually they did have an exorcism. They had two exorcisms, I believe, Lon, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I mean, I don't know who of all was there, you know, at different times. But, you know, of course, they had demonologists there. Then they had supposedly had exorcisms done. So I don't, you know, I don't know who all was there.
Yeah, I mean, that was a weird time in paranormal quote-unquote history, because – I think, aside from Amityville, this was, I think, one of those movies that was made based upon a haunting and a book, and it was a little different, maybe portrayed a little glamorously in the film, but really difficult. It's difficult to read about and difficult to put yourself in the mindset of those folks of what they experienced.
Well, you know, that case is very similar in a way to the case I'm going to be introducing tonight. On the line, we have Erlina Huffman from Sioux City, Iowa. Her and her twin sister went through a rather disturbing haunting. Hello, Erlina. How are you doing this evening?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm fine. This is a case I was involved with. It started back in February of 2013 when I was a member of another group, when we received a request for help from Erlina's sister, Sabrina. And the initial complaint was that she thought there was a dark entity and that she was feeling strange. Family members were being scratched. There were noises. There was smells, rotting flesh odors. And sometimes the TV and radio would turn on themselves, banging on the walls, doors shutting, dishes shaking. The feeling of being paralyzed, and a few other things. Can you explain some of what happened, Erlina?
Some of the other things that happened at her house in particular, my niece was pulled from the bed at one point, and that's when my sister actually took the initiative to call other individuals in to try to help, to figure out what's going on, because my sister is pretty much picked up on things her whole life, you know, and she can sense things, but never to this point. There would also be cupboards opening and closing. The slamming was pretty abrupt. Even when other individuals were there, for example, when the priest came into the house, the noise that it made inside one of the closets from, you know, that you heard from the wall was pretty loud, that we actually asked the neighbor that was adjoined to the duplex type house if they had heard it, you know, thinking maybe they had maybe knocked the wall or, you know, trying to rule out anything. So pictures were actually taken as well. But the more you did, the more things happened. So.
And this actually started at Sabrina's house before she moved in with you, which was actually right across the street from you, wasn't it?
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. And your mother was living there at the time with her and started experiencing dementia and other weird type of symptoms as well, didn't she?
Yes. Yeah. She was 54 at the time. And we assumed it was maybe depression or something. We had lost quite a few family members within the last couple years. And just assumed that it was depression. And then when we finally got her to go to the doctor, they said it was dementia. And the dementia, of course, all forms of dementia is different. But with hers, it was in particular very odd just because of her age. Everybody was flabbergasted, I guess, to say the least, by her age. And, you know, we took her to Mayo. We took her everywhere we thought that they would find answers, and nobody really could say anything except it's just dementia. So there's really nothing that we don't have a diagnosis.
Right.
But she was in one of the bedrooms that we actually had quite a bit of activity as far as pictures. When my grandson was a baby, toddler, he would actually go into the room and he would just stare. It was almost like he was drawn into the room, but he wasn't scared. It was an odd behavior because it was dark, and usually babies don't like darkness.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that was pretty odd, but it didn't seem to bother him. He didn't. It was almost like he was playing with somebody or something to that effect.
Well, Sabrina eventually moved in with you, which was just across the street, and not long after the move, the activity from the previous house started to move into your residence. And from what I gathered, as many as 4 paranormal groups, including a priest, attempted to clear the locations. But not long after that, we were contacted. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. And actually, when you were first initially contacted, it was a blessing just because of how she actually found your group. It was the first one that popped up. And she had been through that same website on looking for people to help
yeah.
a number of times. And then all of a sudden your group popped up and it was just like, wow. You know, so she knew that it was meant to be, and I knew that it was meant to be. So, yeah, it was definitely great.
Well, we arranged to contact you by Skype. And at the time, you know, I had not read the contact form that was submitted by Sabrina. So all I knew was that the clients lived in Sioux City, Iowa, and, you know, I wasn't given an address or anything then. We had a rather short consultation when I sensed that there was an airport aircraft nearby, and I had such a strong feeling of individual energy over a wide area. And I asked, if you remember, I asked you if there was an airport nearby. And yep. You responded right away and said, yeah, there's one right across the street.
Yep. And I was totally blown away, to be honest with you, totally blown away, because I'm like, there's no way you could have known that. Because nobody even knows where my street is. Even if you had my address, I mean, it's not even on, like, when I do my trip maker or whatever, it doesn't even show up. So I was blown away with that, because I live right across the street, literally from the airport.
Well, as many people may remember, on July 19th, 1989, the United Airlines Flight 232, which was a DC-10, crash-landed at Sioux Gateway Airport in Sioux City. And after suffering catastrophic failure from its tail-mounted engine, which led to the loss of all flight control, there were 296 on board, and 111 of them died. And 7 of the desperate children. It soon became apparent then that the energies I detected were probably from that crash. It was so many of them. And eventually these energies were not the problem, but they did contribute to the activity later on. For the first few months, I was still working with the original group, and two remote view sessions were conducted in order to gather evidence. We had several client conferences with the clients. Unfortunately, though, Sabrina was still exhibiting extreme bipolar-like behavior. Even though we were on Skype, we could still observe her fairly well in the cam. She literally changed physically, especially her face.
Yeah.
Erlina had described her activity as well, writing unknown words, talking unknown languages. Her condition was affecting everybody in the house. Maybe you can expound on that a little bit, Erlina.
Wow. As far as her appearance, it was night and day. I mean, you could tell by her eyes. You could tell by her whole disposition. She would, a lot of the times when stuff was, you know, that was affecting her, she would go into the bedroom, and perhaps not even knowing that that's where she was going. And it was like a trance. That's the best that I can explain it. It was like a trance that she was in. But it would be like she would fall into a sleep type behavior. And I would definitely pray over her. And sorry, it's kind of very emotional bringing up things because it's still very real in her life.
Yes.
We have it very well under control, but it's still very real because, you know, I remember one point where I was praying over her and she's mumbling, saying these words. I have no idea what they were. It was nothing I was familiar with, but I knew in my heart that it wasn't good. And then all of a sudden her back arched and it was like something, my sister has back problems. There's no way that she could ever arch her back like that. And she stopped breathing on me.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at that point I knew the one thing that I believed in, which was prayer, was going to have to cease. Otherwise, I felt that my sister's life was in danger. And that killed me, you know, knowing that I was going to have to stop what I believe in and what I knew what was torturing, whatever this is. To give back my sister.
Mm-hmm.
And
I remember seeing a lot of that. That it was very distressing and hard. It was chilling. You know, we were told then that Sabrina's bedroom was the most active. So we had placed a laptop in the middle of the room and directed the camera on an area where the noises had been heard. Everybody left the room as we watched on Skype. In about a 10-minute period, we observed the desk light twice fade in and out, and a framed picture on the wall move a few inches across the wall. So, you know, we were definitely convinced that there was a paranormal energy present. In April 2013, it was obvious that we were getting nowhere with this case. Activity was occurring day and night. Everybody in the house was experiencing something. Shadows were seen in the hallway, banging on the walls. Objects would go missing, items flung across the room, as well as a menacing feeling anytime someone would walk into the house. I decided to take on the case exclusively while the group worked on other projects. Not long after that, I left the group, but I personally continued to work with Erlina and Sabrina. So I told the sisters then that, look, you know, if you need me to contact me anytime 24/7, I was determined to find the actual cause of these disturbances. I worked one-on-one with Sabrina Erlina for the next 8 months, basically learning all I could about the known history of the family and investigating the incidents. It was a very slow process, but eventually some recollections came forward. Now, at one period in the sisters' life, they lived with relatives in Arlington, Texas. I started to research the history of the house, which was built by the grandmother, and the property, and discovered a few interesting facts. For whatever reason, the house and property were valued far less than any other house and property in the huge subdivision. The house had several subsequent residents, some who had died there. I decided that I needed to conduct a controlled remote view along with two associates and a monitor. The session revealed that several rituals had been conducted on the property and that the property had a stigma attached to it by others in the neighborhood. The location also possessed a deep sense of sorrow and hate. We also found that there were a lot of lingering issues revolved around the house. The viewers each reached that conclusion. At the time, I decided not to reveal all this information to Erlina and Sabrina. And way, I'm glad I did, because Erlina just soon asked me if I could find the whereabouts of her missing aunt. While they were living in Arlington, her aunt disappeared after leaving with some people one afternoon at the house. And the last time they saw her was when they got into the car. And I conducted a distant reading a few days later, which I used to discern information while I'm in a heightened perceptive state. It can be described as an extension of my five senses, but usually I execute these sessions alone. I don't want people accusing me of cold reading a client, though it would be conducted on Skype. Voice inflection can still give a reader certain clues, so I just avoid duality as much as possible. Unfortunately, I sense that her aunt had no longer been among the living, but finding a body would require some field work, which I wasn't in a position to do. So this disappearance had weighed heavily on the family for many years. I believe that much of this sorrow, combined with the malevolent energies within the Texas house, seeded something within the sisters. The girls then moved to Nebraska, then Iowa, where they reside today. Whatever this energy was, it traveled with them, continuing to grow when times were tough and when life seemed out of control. Now, Erlina is a very deep, devout Christian. She truly believes in her faith and confidence keeping this entity at bay, even though she did experience a lot of the paranormal activity. But on the other hand, Sabrina has more pressing personal issues. By the time 2012 rolled around, the entity had grown to a point where she could no longer control it. It followed her everywhere, even to her workplace. It was determined by me and with some consultation with the colleagues that Sabrina had been plagued by a thought form entity. And I discussed this with Erlina and Sabrina. It's a mind-created supernatural being. Basically, it's a poltergeist. You have anything you want to add, Erlina?
No. I first want to add, I almost interrupted you, but I didn't. When you say 24/7 that you are with us, you were literally with us 24 hours, 7 days a week, because we called you at 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, there was no time that you weren't there for us, and so thank you for that, because I want to really point that out, because it really seriously did not matter what time of day it was. You were always there. As far as the thought, that has a huge deal. I mean, that plays, even in the house, making the energy very positive, leaving out any kind of negative thoughts. The thought, you know, your mind is a powerful tool, and even for something like this. And this is something that I never thought was possible, that was out there, just because I guess on the faith that I have, that I never looked this far. But I know that now, with all the teachings that Lon has given me, and with becoming more in tune with my spirituality, which is totally awesome, I know that there's more out there, and I know that our guardian angels are definitely there for us, and that is, it's definitely helped me grow closer that way to them, and to knowing that they're there for us. So,
being a poltergeist, you know, regardless of what is presented on television and the movies, poltergeist activity is very rare. There are several theories as to what a poltergeist is, but it seems that it always has two relative factors. One would be psychokinesis, or PK, which is an ability that allows a person to influence objects or people without physical interaction. The other factor would be malevolency towards the oppressed and those around them. Now, poltergeist haunting can only be curtailed by the person generating the entity. Now, that involves instruction on how to control emotions and fear, as well as avoiding uncontrollable situations, which I have been going with. I've been giving like 8 months of this with the girls, and they have really taken it to heart, and I think it has helped a lot. Now, here's where the overwhelming spirit energy at the location comes into play. Now, as a result of that crash of the United Airlines Flight 232, there were wandering spirits in the vicinity. I mean, many of which didn't even realize that they are no longer part of a living body or remain for other reasons. Malevolent entities require a lot of energy to remain viable. Now, they cannot feed on human emotion. If they cannot feed on human emotion or life forces, they then look to they need to find it elsewhere. And earthbound spirits are fodder for strong entities. And this was the reason it became so difficult to weaken this troublesome entity. And I instructed Arlene on how to form a barrier around the residence in order to keep earthbound spirits out of the house. We were starting to see a change in the lessening of the activity. Now, Sabrina still has the attachment with her, but she has moved out of the sister's house and has moved in with her fiance. As well, she is no longer living near the airport in the mass of earthbound energies. The degree of her torment has lessened, though I continue to stay in touch with Erlina and Sabrina especially. Eventually, I hope they can find peace. But I think we're on the right track. I think things have gotten a lot better. Well, do you have anything to say, anything other to say about that, Erlina?
Oh, I know things have gotten a lot better. Definitely. I mean, I don't feel, you know, there was a point in my sister's life where I thought I was going to lose her, definitely, on this earth. And I don't feel that anymore. I don't feel that, you know, I'm going to lose my sister, you know, because I was pretty much a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week person that stayed with her. I mean, I almost lost my relationship over it, you know, but it was something that I needed to do. And I know that she is still having problems that, you know, when we talked about the show, I said, you know, sis, I said, I want people to know how you feel. But she just says that she wants people to know that it's happening out there and it's not their fault. And that they're not crazy. Mm-hmm. And she really wants to talk, but she's just not able to. It's almost like a control thing, I think. You know, I'm so easy to judge her, and I always tell people not to judge others, but when it comes to her, I'm like, Sissy, you're stronger than that, and I know she is. But I just think people need to know that it's not their fault, because that's a negative energy on itself. But with her, you know, there's a lot of other things that we haven't quite got to, I think. I think there's more to it.
Yeah.
But she said, you know, I just want people to know that it feels like there's two people inside me when it happens. It's like this, it's not like a voice, but it is. She said it's really hard to explain, but people out there would know what she's talking about. And she says that, you know, she just wants them to know that they're not alone and that she's there, you know. So I guess I don't mean to get all teary-eyed, but that was pretty emotional text for my sister to say something like that. But
yeah, you know, I talked to Sabrina last night, and she told me that she wants people to hear about what happened to her. And, you know, we do have things to work on yet, but she's getting there. And it's really, you know, this was real. I mean, this was actually something that happened. This, you know. People say, well, it's an emotional or mental thing, but it's not. This was something that actually happened. So I tell you what, we're kind of running out of time, Erlina. Thanks a lot for coming on. I hope your story does help others, and I will be in contact very soon.
Thank you, Lon, for everything.
You take care now.
Thank you. You too. Mm-hmm. Bye.
Well, thank you, Erlina, for calling in. Very interesting story, Lon, and very sad story to hear about Sabrina and what she's going through. Erlina, thank you for calling in. We appreciate you sharing your story with us, and we want to wish you a wonderful evening.
Thank you, too.
Take care. Bye-bye. Now we'll move on to the next story. Welcome to the show, Violet.
Hi. Hello, everybody.
Hi, Violet.
Hi, Lon. It's sort of bringing back memories listening to the woman who appeared before me, and I had very similar experiences to that. And it's difficult to even believe it happened. Even to this day, it's fighting reality to accept the fact that things like this exist and it was just myself that experienced it, I would say, well, it was some sort of delusion or anxiety. But being that there were multiple people that experienced it, it's absolutely 100% a real experience.
So, Ivana, I read your book, and can you kind of describe what happened? And from the beginning, you know, with the building of the new house and what eventually happened?
Well, we searched for property, and we wound up going into this old historical area where a lot of Revolutionary War activity happened. As a matter of fact, it was documented that George Washington and his troops were up on this high point that we actually moved into that was a cul-de-sac. But it was really virgin territory when we came up. There was nothing but forest. And they had put the street in, and we selected a lot, and there were only two other properties that were already built, and then there was one being built, and then there were two more going into the total of five. When we dug up the foundation, I mean, we really went into this ancient earth, and we put a pool in also in addition to that. Now, my neighbor had said to me when they started digging their property, they found bones, but she never reported it because she was afraid the town would stop her from building. But my feeling is that we definitely disturbed graves because it started as a manifestation of almost poltergeist activity where it would shut the television in my daughter's room on and off with a push-pull button. Then it began manifesting like a smell. And you literally would have to walk through the smell of a dirty, smelly, burning man. And it would purposely stand in front of you, and you couldn't believe it because it was like hitting a wall of odor. It progressed from that to I would be home alone with my burglar alarm in, and my book is called Haunted McMansion because I'm sort of emphasizing the fact that we had, you know, lived the American dream and said, okay, we're going to build a big, gorgeous house, and it's our little McMansion, and, you know, found a piece of land, put it up like it was, I don't know what, 5,000 square feet, whatever. We were all excited and thought, well, this is going to be perfect, and not realizing that possibly we should investigate it before we built anything there, that we may have stirred things up. It never enters your mind. But it progressed to the point where I would be home alone with the burglar alarm on, and all of a sudden I hear, like, footsteps walking around upstairs. Now, I knew my sons were at school, my daughter was away, my husband was at work, and I'm alone in this house with the burglar alarm on, and who the hell is upstairs? So I'd go upstairs to look. Honey, is it you? Is it you? No, nobody was there. This would happen continuously, and I would sort of just live with it and think, I don't know, it's something bizarre going on. Then it started with doors slamming upstairs. Opening creaking doors. But when I would run up and open the door myself, there was no creak. But whatever this thing was doing, you would make the door go, and then slam it really hard. Then it progressed to making sounds, like things were disappearing. One particular day, I was in the room with my dog, and I had the door locked. I was on the computer in my guest room, and it stood outside the door and started whistling. And I got petrified, and my dog confirmed there was something there because he jumped up and started looking at the door and barking viciously. And I really didn't know what to do. So it was just so, so creepy. And I didn't realize that all these things were going on affecting my children also because I didn't want to talk about it. I was like, well, if I say it, I'm going to scare the children. So, but it became, I don't know how it came that we all knew it existed, this thing, but I had the same experience with this thing following me where I went. I would go out, I would smell it in my car. I would go into a store, I'd come out, I'd be standing at the front of the store, I'd have to walk into it, like I said, the wall of odor, it would be there. People started noticing it that came to my house. What is that peculiar smell? And I was like, oh my God, the ghost came out. And when I had spoken to a psychic who was actually very accurate about everything with other matters, they told me that I should stay away. It was dangerous, that it was a soldier. And another psychic confirmed that and said that a soldier had gotten killed and was looking for his mother. And it seemed to really come out around teenagers and women. Mm-hmm. It would manifest really, really strongly. And one day my son actually saw it, and I know he couldn't fabricate this because he was probably about 11 years old. And he was very scared. He said, "Mommy, when I was coming up the basement steps, behind me, there's a big mirror we had in the hallway. He said, I saw a man that was real scary looking, dressed in black behind me." So, this went on for years, and it was to the point where it was, I don't know whether it was just this thing or whether some other things got aroused by it and came, but I had claw marks down my back all the time. And there were incidences where my son started telling me he couldn't breathe at night. He felt like somebody was sitting on him. He couldn't breathe. He kept waking me up. And then it started happening to me to the point where I really thought I was going to die. And I'm a nurse, too, an RN. So I'm always, like, sort of discounting everything. It's, oh, don't get alarmed. And it's anxiety. It's this, that, this. But it was real and so harmful that I literally felt like my throat had closed and I couldn't move. I couldn't even wake my husband up. And, I mean, it really just started escalating to the point where the whole house was filled with the presence of whatever this mournful, horrible entity was. And it was almost a decade we lived there.
So you eventually moved out, and one of the neighbors actually started to have to deal with this entity after you left, didn't they?
Well, yeah, it was odd because it moved to my neighbor's house, which, like I said, it used to follow me. It actually followed me to one of my friend's house and stayed there for a couple of weeks. And she told me, that thing has been in my bedroom for 2 weeks. And it went over to my neighbor's house, and I never had spoken to her about the ghost.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she knew, maybe one of the kids mentioned it, but it literally moved objects in front of her. It knocked all her cookbooks over. Her daughter said it would open and close her shower door all night long in front of her. And then one night she came home, and I had never told her about the whistling incident. And she said that she came in with her son. They had a very big house also, and they were there alone. They put the alarm on, and they were in the kitchen, and somebody started whistling really loud in the foyer. And they got so frightened, and they said, "Well, whoever you are, you better leave this house." And they called the police, which there were multiple police incidents at my home also because my sons were frightened hearing somebody walking around the house when they were there alone.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it moved to my neighbor's house.
So you haven't had any problems with it after you left, did you?
No, but I'll tell you what, my older son told me, "Please don't go back to the street we lived on, even though I have friends there."
Yeah.
Because we are so fearful this thing is going to see us and follow us. And it's strange because when I did my book cover, I had a bunch of pictures I took of the house. And on it, there actually is a manifestation of a man. And it's similar to what the psychic told me, that it was wearing a black hat.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at the picture, I blew it up. It literally looks like I took a picture of this ghost.
Why don't you tell everybody where they can get your book on? It's on Amazon. Sorry, I'm on Kindle. I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's Haunted McMansion. And if you're a Prime member, you could read it for free. And I'm waiting to do a free giveaway, but it hasn't even been on there a month. But when it gets to a month, I'm going to do a free giveaway, like a limited, you know, special offer, because I really want people to read this because I really feel it might be helpful for people who are in denial like I was. I mean, I have a psychology degree. I have a nursing degree. I have a master's degree. I spent 6 months working on my master's in nursing psychology in an old asylum. So I'm not an irrational person. I'm scientific. Everything's quantifiable, measurable. And to accept an experience like this as something legitimate and something that happened took me a really long time, and I am with absolute certainty saying that it was real and it happened. It wasn't hysteria, anxiety, delusion. It was more than me that experienced it, and the terror that we all collectively share, the children and I, I will never get over it. Never.
Well, I hope for the best for you, Violet, and I want to thank you for coming on the show and to relaying your experiences. And I do think these type of experiences will help others as well. I'm so glad people are out there that aren't afraid to talk about them.
It has to be told, and I think there's a greater. Well, actually, if you look in antiquity, people always accepted the fact that there were spirits around.
Yeah,
we've sort of in the modern 19th, 20th century have been in denial about it, but it's always been accepted part of human reality, and I think we just have to learn how to live peacefully with it.
Well, I want to thank you for joining us, and I hope. Hope the book sales go well, and you take care.
Thank you so much, Lon. Good night, everybody. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Father, for coming on the show tonight. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, Violet joining us to talk about her story, and it's a very interesting one as well. Folks, it is real. These people are experiencing these things, and hopefully tonight you hearing some of these encounters and from real witnesses and real experiencers, that you understand that this is a real phenomenon, and hopefully what we're presenting to you, and if there are others out there who are going through it, hopefully this will help you, and it'll give you some suggestions and tips, and maybe understand that there is help out there, and you have to reach out for it.
I just happened to stumble across this story. And she had about an 80-page book on Kindle, and I decided, well, I'm going to read this thing and see what this is about. And I decided I'd like to have her on the show. I wanted to hear from her what she had to say, and I'm glad I did. If anybody has anything else they'd like to share, you've got 15 minutes to do it. Give us a call.
And speaking of which, we do have another call coming in. Caller from the 760 area code, welcome to BTE Radio.
Hello, that was going to be me. I heard it, and it went off, and I went, there we go, of course.
Yep.
it's Scott.
Hey, Scott,
good
how you
hear,
doing?
Good to hear from you guys tonight. Great stories. I'll try and make this really short so you can fit people in.
Okay.
This happened in August of 2011. I was dealing with I was brought in on an investigation from a group that was dealing with a really interesting property. And I can give you guys the information on this privately if you want to look into it more, because the people are still trying to find help. But without giving exact details out to everybody, it's up in Green Lane, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh.
And it happened in around August of 2011. It's a very old house that the family found out has ties to the Underground Railroad. And they actually found bones in the walls in the basement of an area that was covered and then collapsed. And then things started happening. They own about 50 acres of land behind the house. And when we were doing some digging and investigating the next 3 days after we went there, we found out that there were burial mounds. And they did get in contact with local tribes, and they've had that area blessed. Long story short, all of these weird things were happening for many, many months prior to our investigation. Things were breaking. People were getting hurt. People were being pushed downstairs. They have 5 dogs, and all the dogs were barking and going crazy at things that weren't there, but obviously were attacking something. They brought in many groups. It was our turn, finally. After a long night, lots of interesting things happened, but I won't bore you with all the details. The malevolent part was this. At the end of the investigation, at the request of the client, they asked me to bless the property. And I'm not a demonologist by any stretch of the imagination, although it's a subject that I'm highly interested in. And I spent 1 year in seminary out of college and then decided it's just not for me. But I like that area of investigations, and it really highly fascinates me. So that's why they brought me onto the case, because they believed that there was something malevolent there. People were getting very nauseously ill while we were there. I was the entire time, the minute I got to the property. like you were mentioning earlier, Lon, the flies were buzzing always around me, nobody else.
Mm-hmm.
But I was covered in flies. And I've had this happen on various occasions at different properties. And whenever that happens, like somebody joked earlier, it's never a good thing. I mean, it's something that you see in the horror movies, but it actually is counted in a lot of cases. It actually does really happen.
Yeah, there have been a lot of cases with this manifestation has happened.
Yeah, and it's bizarre because, like, you get this gut feeling like this isn't normal. Okay, we'll move on. So I've been trained by a parish priest in our area that I can't name because he's not supposed to be telling anybody what to do with these things, but he's interested in these subjects.
Mm-hmm.
And he's privately kind of taken me under his wing. So basically, I just know the basics of house blessings, which basically anybody can do. You don't have to be a seminarian or a religious person. But he gave me some other little tricks and things that the average people just may not know about. So I'll just mention this now because this focuses into the story. I had a blessed pair of rosary beads from the Pope in the palm of my hand that I took out of my pocket and held it in my fist, but no one in the group, including the clients, knew that I had this item in my possession. So as I'm walking around and I'm blessing the property with holy water, Alan, our cameraman at the time, is filming me, and I'm in a tank top because it was very hot. And I look back at the camera, and I say, I really don't want to bless the basement because I kept getting the nauseous feeling and the creepiness there. But I'm about to do it anyway. So I start to make the sign of the cross over the doorway, and then all of a sudden, I get this shrieking pain, and I curse. And I'm like, oh, what the hell was that? And Alan's like, oh, my God, stop what you're doing. We have to go in the kitchen, which was the room adjacent. So we go in. The client screams, oh, my God. She comes over. I'm freaking out because I don't know what's going on, but I just feel a burning on my neck. A scratch mark happened in the shape of a cross on the back of my neck, going from the base of my neck to the middle of my back.
Wow.
And I was bleeding. Just lightly, like a paper cut bleed. But nonetheless, it wasn't there a moment ago, and I could feel it, and it really hurt. So the client gave me a wet paper towel, and they're patting it. And Alan rolled the film back, and he's like, watch this. And we're watching it, and I'm starting to shake because I've been on many investigations. I love horror. I'm in a metal band. I love these things. You know, stereotypically, and here I'm faced with it. I just want to leave. I'm like, okay, this is beyond my level of, I didn't want it to be this real. This is too much.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden we're working with an obelisk and it starts to say the entire time we were there, it was spitting out words that meant things like it was saying British and pound. And I had a British t-shirt on and somebody had pound money on them. Like there were things that made sense. And then it said things about the property. Well, at this point, as I'm shaking, I'm about to say that I'm scared and my mouth is open, but the words aren't coming out. And the ovulus starts making these crackling noises. And then it says, kill, hurt, you, and fear. All four of those words, one after the other. And I just lost it. I was like, oh my God, I'm about to pack everything up and bolt. And I was like, this is too much. And then we hear this laughing. And unbeknownst to us, in the corner of the kitchen, behind us in a chair, was the youngest daughter of the client. And she had this most evil look on her face. And I look over at her, and she's laughing maniacally. And I look back at the mother, and the mother's shrugging her shoulders like, that's not my daughter. Like, that doesn't sound like her. And she had a very manly voice. And I said, did you do this? Are you laughing at me? And she nodded yes and had like this glazed look in her eyes. So I'm like, oh, I don't know what to do. And the client's looking at me like, help my daughter. And I'm like, this is beyond me. Like, we should get some like professional help here. So the father was like, please do something. So I didn't know what to do. So I just walked up to her and I held her hand with my fist that I mentioned earlier. And she started screaming and climbing up the chair and saying, it's burning, it's burning. And I looked at the mother, and the mother's like, please don't stop. I trust you. So I look back at the ghost group, and they're looking at me like, this is you. You know, this is why we brought you. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. And they're like, do what the priest told you to do. I'm like, the priest didn't tell me what to do about this. So I just acted on instinct, and I just held her head close to my chest and muttered under my own breath that no one else could hear, I just started praying. And I just very intently started thinking in my head, leave this poor child alone, because she was like 14. I'm like, leave this young girl alone. If you want to F with anybody, come into me, but leave this child be. I won't fight you. Now, I don't know why I said those things. And now that I look back at it, it was very stupid of me to do so. But it was kind of like, I try to explain it to people, like you're walking through the park and a young baby falls in the creek. Do you jump in to get it even if you don't know if you can swim? Instinctively, if you wanted to help, most people probably would try. So I just did it because I just wanted to help this young girl. And I didn't really think about the consequences. Well, it ended about 15 minutes later. Her eyes went back to normal. She started crying. She was shivering. She was very cold. She was burning in the beginning, but then she was very cold to the touch. The mother went over. They hugged. She said, that's my daughter again. Thank you. We packed up. I left. I got nauseously ill for about the next 3 days straight. Had to go to the doctor. They basically told me, you know, you have major issues. Don't do this again. I didn't tell them what had happened. But now I actually have heart issues. I've been back to the property once, was there for 15 minutes, didn't do a thing, brought other people to the property because we were handing the case over to another group. And I just started throwing up everywhere, got embarrassed, went outside. The client said, it's okay, we understand. And I literally grabbed the nearest guy. I didn't even know him. And I said, you need to take me home now. And it was just like in the Exorcist movie. I don't even want to go back there. Like just saying this, I'm shaking. That is the one case. I'm still friends with the family, friends with them on Facebook, talked to the daughter recently. She's doing very well. She's going in the military now. She's got very high grades. She's a very good girl. But they still have these problems. And we did one little kind of trick, and I used a device that I won't mention. It's low-key. It's not electronic. And I did something that the priest had told me to do the second time around to try and ask if it's a demonic entity, what is your name? In the name of Jesus Christ, what is your name? Don't know why that works, but it apparently does. And we did get a response. So we wrote it down, got it to the priest. He also gave me the info of where he looked it up so I could back up the claim. And it, I won't say the name because when you, I don't know if you, I'm sure you know this though, Lon, but when you say a name of a supposed evil entity, especially demonic in nature, it supposedly gives them power. So if you don't mention the name, other people can't go exploring with it and call it up. So we did look it up, begins with an A, and it is one of the older demonic entities.
I know it's
in the Sumerian. Yeah, and it that blew me away, and I've never been back since. So my heart goes out to anybody that does this, like John Zaffis and everybody that I'm like, they're my idols. I don't know how they do this 24/7. It still interests me, but I really don't know if I could actually make like a living doing it, or, I mean, I want to help people, but it's a very, very scary subject. And well, I know a lot of people are probably going, oh, this isn't real, but it is very real for certain people in certain situations.
Well, if you want to refer them to me, I'd be more than happy to talk to them.
I actually discovered your group while we were doing that case online. I found out about Spirit Rescue, and I mentioned that to them. I don't think they ever did.
Yeah, I'm not with Spirit Rescue.
My apologies.
Yeah, it's astralperceptions.com.
Okay.
I've got some links to it on Facebook. And, you know, you just put it in there. All the information will be there.
Yeah, and I'll get a hold of you privately, and I'll let you know who they are, because they're friends with me on Facebook, and you could friend them and talk to them privately, too, because I'm sure they would be very gracious for your help. But I'm going to shut up. Thank you for letting me share a few moments and tell you my experience, I hope you get another caller.
I hope we do, too, and I want to thank you for coming on, and I'll probably be talking to you.
Thanks,
yeah,
Scott.
Definitely, because I've had other things I got to write you about, Lon. That's not demonic, but alien in nature. So stuff for phantoms and monsters, definitely.
Well, thanks for the plug. Right.
Thanks for calling, Scott. We appreciate it. You have a good night, my friend.
You're welcome, Eric. Take care. Bye-bye.
You too. Bye-bye. All right, folks, we are at the bottom of the hour. It's 9:30 here on the East Coast, and we are going to step away for our last break of the show. Amy Perry is going to be joining us in just a few minutes, and she is bringing a guest on the program to wrap up the show tonight, as we are talking about malevolent hauntings here on the show. And we're hopefully this information is getting outlawed, and hopefully it's helping folks out there to realize that these are real things. These do happen to normal, everyday people. People go through this, and they're not alone. If there's somebody out there dealing with it, you're not alone.
Yeah, I've seen it firsthand. I mean, this stuff does happen. It's, it is scary sometimes. I sometimes wonder why I bother to do some of the things I do with people. But, it takes a commitment. But it's always best. It's always the best thing in the world when somebody is free of it and they're back to normal, and that's the whole thing. That's the best present I can get from anything like that. So, yeah, I do hope it's helping people that are listening, and when it gets on the podcast eventually, I hope it helps a lot of people.
Yeah, me too. Well, we're going to jump into our last break, and when we come back, Amy Perry will be joining us, and she has a special guest to join us as well. And we'll conclude the show tonight with that last guest, and any last-minute callers we'll take when we're finished with that guest, and if we have the time, of course, and hopefully Skype will cooperate with us. It always seems to happen when we have paranormal shows.
Yes, it does. Figure.
But we are going to step away. You're listening to BTE Radio live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, KPGZ LP 102.7, The Hog. My name's Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's show, along with Lon Strickler and the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. We invite you to stay right where you're at, because more great talk radio continues right here on BTE Radio.
Stick around if you dare. Beyond the Edge Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and KPGZ LP 102.7, The Hog, out of Excelsior Springs, Missouri. My name is Eric Altman, your host and producer of tonight's program. And with me, as always, Lon Strickler from Phantoms and Monsters and Astral Perceptions. Joining us for full time, the last time, the Fork Chop, Sean Forker. But he'll be back every once in a while, so he says. Some I don't buy that, Sean. I just don't believe you.
You know you can't get rid of me forever.
I don't buy it. I think you're leaving us for good.
Well, you just have separation anxiety.
I do. I'm going to miss you, buddy. I'm going to have nobody pick on when it comes to food.
You may be the only one.
You're probably right.
That's okay.
But life goes on. And we found somebody to replace you already, so.
I know. That's the best. No gaps.
Yeah. And speaking of which... And she is joining us now on the show. Better late than never. That's a little dig at you. Amy Perry joins us, our paranormal news correspondent, now turned our color commentator co-host of the show. Hi, Amy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Hello, everybody.
Hey.
Hi, Amy.
Hello. Hello, boys. I always wanted to do that.
Hello, boys.
Very good. Now, Amy, I understand you have brought a very special guest with you tonight to join us talking about malevolent hauntings, and this gentleman that is joining us has had an encounter himself.
I have brought a very special guest, someone near and dear to many of us here. And besides, you guys are going to get sick of hearing me week after week, so why not let him talk? I brought the one and only Reverend Tim Shaw from Black Cat Lounge. Yay! List of credits. I mean, my God, we could talk just a whole show on what he does. Ordained spiritualist minister, medium, paranormal investigator, author, television, teacher. He's a mentor. He's just an all-around great guy. Tim!
Boy, I got to give you $1 at the end of this show for that introduction. You made me even sound good. And that scares me more than the any of the negative stuff that I've dealt with in the past.
There you go.
Welcome, Tim. Glad to hear from you, my friend.
Hey, very, very nice. I'm glad everybody decided to invite me on tonight. Now, what are we talking about? We're talking about nasty-ass spirits, right? We're talking about crazy stuff tonight, right? Is that that the topic?
That we are.
Crazier the better.
Well, let me throw that. You guys pretty much know what my background is. And Amy, we talked off the air about different topics. I'm one of those people that I've knocked around for a long time, and I was introduced into the Lilydale Spiritual Assembly like in 1963, so that'll give you, and I was older, I was a child then, so I'll give you guys that, you know that Lon and I probably helped Moses bring down the Ten Commandments, you know. But, a lot of people don't realize that, there's a lot of negative stuff. And first, let me put a caveat out there. My religion, basically, because I am a spiritualist / witch, and I'm a follower of earth magic, and I am also I'm a very interested in spiritualist history and the way we worked over the years. And let me just tell everybody that my religion doesn't teach heaven or hell. My religion doesn't teach angels really or demons. And now I have to tell everybody that there are metaphysical Christian denominations of spiritualists, and there are others that are that are angel orientated or Bible orientated. And my particular path is a little bit different. We're we believe that things are negative, things are positive. We work with guides that are entities. Some are those that have been living; others have never lived. So that being said, I don't put down any religion, but however, in Atlanta, I just spoke at the Atlanta Through the Veil conference last weekend, and as I explained to people, my take is that the client who comes to me is the most important person in my entire life at that time, and I have to devote, and you guys know, especially Lon being a healer, you have to devote so much time to each and every one of them. And I always said, listen, if I'll do whatever it takes. I network widely. I'm trained in many Christian blessings and cleansings and clearings, along with satanic and through the Church of Satan. Satan, my friend Corvus Nocturnum is a member of it. I've also worked with the Jewish clientele. I've worked with a lot of different people through a lot of different faiths. And basically what we try to do is work within that faith to reinforce the control. We want to give control back to the individual, and that's 50%, 60% of the battle. And then you reinforce them as much as you possibly can. But now, Amy, what were we going to talk about today? Because I sent you a couple of topics, and I'm not sure where you want to go with it.
Yeah, you kind of did the like flip thing at the end, you know, just add a little bit of extra pressure. But I know you like to push, so that's okay. It's you.
You got that right. Yeah.
All right, and I'm not familiar with. Now I'm a little bit more familiar since I have a book from a really great author. I'm not going to mention any names, but you. So I am familiar with the dorm room haunting. So I really want to hear about the Hinsdale farmhouse because I'm not that familiar. And I was trying to kind of get acquainted with it, but it sounds like a lot of stories that you hear, a family's looking for a house, they find this house, they fall in love with the house, a few little things go wrong here and there, and then, all hell kind of breaks loose. I know, you've had some experience with that house, and it's in your neck of the woods, so I'd love to hear.
The Hinsdale House is one of those great enigmas that we've heard from right when I was younger. I was probably late teens when I first heard about the Hinsdale House. And basically, the Hinsdale House is an old 1800s farmhouse. It's a gorgeous little house on a little plot of land, and it's very, very idyllic. It overlooks a great meadow, and at the time in the 1970s, there wasn't a lot around there, so it was pretty isolated. The Dandy family, who lived in Buffalo at the time, they were looking for a house in the country, and they just were desperate. They wanted, even though the husband still worked in the city, they wanted to get away. They needed to get away. Well, they found this beautiful little house on that was for sale, and it was really reasonable, and they bought it. And they did some work to the house and really made it a home. Well, they were there for a couple months, and what eventually happened was the psychic phenomena is kind of funny because sometimes it feels you out. Sometimes it has to grow. Sometimes it depends on the individuals, and this is one of those stories that it really amps up with the proper individuals. They moved into the house, and nothing happened for a while, and then the phenomena began on the outside of the house. They started seeing people in the woods around them. They go out looking for them. They couldn't find it. There used to be a barn right to the, if you look at the front of the house, it was to the left of the house. And they knocked the barn down and they dug a pond there. And they think that the theory is that they disturbed something in the ground that was perhaps underneath the barn or on the barn floor, which is, you know, it's very, very common. However, it can get really nasty. Well, the phenomena started on the outside, and they would get chants in Latin. They would get the crying of children. They would get the dog would dig up these bones near this pond, and the dog would bring it to him. But the weird thing is the dog never wanted to come into the house. So eventually things started to amp up, and they called them umbrella nights. When it's hard to go and describe it unless you've really gone through it. I've gone through it a couple times. It gets very, very ozone-y. It feels as if the barometer just spikes. It's like this massive thunderhead that's coming in at you. I've had it at when I was a volunteer at Old Fort Niagara. I've had it at a couple really nasty hauntings, little sites of hauntings in residentials. Mm-hmm. But this place, it got really, really bad. When it started to come into the house, they started seeing a Victorian girl at the bottom of the stairs walking by, and that was just the beginning. And they would get the bangs on the doors and raps on the walls and knockings on the door and a baby crying in the basement, which was an old earthen basement. And it just got worse and worse and worse, to the point where people got scratched in the location. I myself, I've gotten scratched in the location. It drew blood once.
Oh.
And it just got worse and worse. Things started to disappear. Now, an A-port is when objects come in mm-hmm. to a location. They come out of thin air, transmutation of matter. And things that they had no association with the house were there. But then money started disappearing, and other things started disappearing. And there were three daughters and a son, and all of them started to go and experience things. And if the house is really strangely kind of laid out, because you have to get to the one daughter's room, this Mary's room, through the master bedroom, which is at the top of the stairs, and there's no landing. It looks like somebody just slammed up walls to create rooms. And what was happening in her room was that there were sounds all the time of things moving, and the light would suddenly fall off this table, but it would never fall hard enough to break, and it would never go on its side. There's a single window there, and paranormal investigators lately, within the last 2 years, have actually photographed something in that window, and it is what we consider the heart of the house. We always look for the heart of the house, whatever is going to really start amping things up. It got so bad that Mary, the one daughter, could no longer stay in there, and they just kept the room shut. And even though it was shut, you get scratching on the walls and banging and growls and stuff in there. So it got to the point where they contacted a well, he was an envoy for the Vatican. He is a his name was Father Alphonsus Trebault, and he was a Jesuit, and he actually taught religious studies, and he actually taught a couple courses in the occult at St. Bonaventure University. And he was kind of eccentric because in his classes, he would go and leave the very first row open. Nobody could sit in the front row because he left it open for the ghosts. And when I started to do the groundwork for this case and start understanding it a little bit more, I actually was able to go in there. I was able to see everything that was written on this case, along with you guys talked about the Smurls case. He was they had presented him with case evidence for him to go and review for the Smurls case, and hundreds of them. And he did unsanctioned, what they call unsanctioned exorcisms, because exorcisms properly have to be sanctioned by the Roman Catholic Church, the diocese and such. But an unsanctioned exorcism can be done by just about any priest anywhere without, you know, having that permission. And when the Warrens were up there, they did a talk at Bonaventure, and this girl showed up, and this girl supposedly went and sold her soul to the devil and all this whole thing. And they actually got a hold of him and took her to a hotel room where they were staying, and Father Trebault came in there and did an exorcism on her. So this guy is big mojo, and they brought him in. They were getting desperate because it got to the point where it was peaking. The one girl, and her name escapes me, heard banging on the back wall, and she went and looked out this kitchen window, and the kitchen door is right there, and all of a sudden the door just slammed open, and this creature came flying with red eyes, came flying at her, and it chased her into this small utility room. It scared her so badly that she had brown eyes that her eyes actually changed to blue. And the only reason why I believe this is because I interviewed Clara Miller, Clara Dandy at the time, who, you know, that was the mom in the house, but I also interviewed another gentleman who was there during the time period, and he attests to it. And this is what was going on almost nightly, and then it would stop. It would stop, and then it would go on again. And Clara even talks about crazy stuff that was happening. One of the first things that she noticed when something was wrong is she looked out her bedroom window, and at the time it was this big old farm field. And she saw this house, all the lights burning and people walking in the window. You know, you could see people walking in the window. She said, I'm going to go over there tomorrow and introduce myself. She look out the next day in the morning, no house. No house.
No house?
No house. No house. And is, again, she attests to it. It's in her book. When I did an interview with her, same thing. We started to go. Father Trebault came in. And he did a mass in the kitchen. Well, it amped it up. A lot of times whenever you introduce something like this that's not a deliverance, or, you know, exorcisms are for human beings, deliverances are done on houses and locations. And he just did a mass. He said, well, that ought to do it. And he, a really nice guy, drove away, and things went crazy. And that's what happens sometimes when you do blessings in houses. And Lon will tell you, sometimes they use this, the malevolent energies will use this vibration and just slam these people again. Mm-hmm. So it got so bad that he had to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. Meanwhile, the word came out, and it was like, and this is on a little dead end road in the middle of nowhere, and it was like a circus. It got so bad that Mr. Dandy used to have to sit out there with a gun so people wouldn't come in and bother the family. You know, I mean, even today, the house is, they're going and revamping the house. They're going to open it up, I guess. It was opened up for a year or so for investigations. And, but I mean, people even now will go up there and we'll be doing some field work or just doing some outside work, and people just drive by, and you know, it's a thrill seeking thing, especially in the fall. Well,
so it's still active,
very active. And this, I got to tell you something that's really interesting about this is what I find is that negatively charged locations are famous for having overlapping and extended hauntings. Now, we interviewed, six people that rented the house, and I didn't get a chance to meet the last owners who have now passed on. But every single one of them that we talked to, including the recordings, the transcripts that I've seen of the Joe and Flo Mishnick, the last owners, everyone repeats. They keep saying this, what happens. It's very, very negative. It starts real slowly. Same thing. And what we found also is when children are there, younger people, teenagers, it amps up even more. Some dowsers I know went up there to try to help, and they identified two negative ley lines that crossed directly underneath the house. And it really affected the woman, Flo, who was living there at the time. And her chair was actually right there. And if you go to the house, you can see where the back of her chair rubbed against the paneling. And right in that center, right in that point is where both two negative ley lines that are really badly charged come from. Well, they had Father Trebolt brought in a psychic, Alex Tanis. He was pretty good. I don't think he was really right on with what he said about the house per se, because there were things that went on, like in this crawl space over the stairs. The chimney was pulled apart, and they found it. They found the bricks laid out like in a pyramid fashion. And he said that they had killed people and stuffed them up there, which I don't believe, because it's easier to put people in a basement than it is, especially an earthen basement, than it is up there. I know, like in the Hydesville case of the Fox sisters in the 1840s, this gentleman who haunted that house, and which led to the formation of the religion of modern spiritualism, was killed, and he was actually dismembered. His head was buried in the floor of the house, and his body was put behind a false wall. So that I'm not too right about, but he did pinpoint the lake or the little pond, and he did believe that there were murders there.
Wow!
And
sounds like a pretty scary place, Tim.
It's. I was just up there. As a matter of fact, I was up there about a month ago. I took my dog Ebony up there, a black lab. And I was doing some, just filming. We got a project coming up with that. And all of a sudden, the dog, you know how labs are. They're all happy-go-lucky. They love the place. And all of a sudden, the dog stopped and was staring and let a little growl. And her hackles were up, and she was afraid. And you could go and you could just feel that energy. And I looked at her. I said, you know what, kid? Let's go. Because you could feel that oppressive energy starting. Yeah. Well, anyway, Trebolt and Alex Tanis, they suggested they do a deliverance on the house. Now, a film crew from NYU came out to record it because Alex Tanis was working on different projects.
And if I can interrupt you real quick, Tim, we've got about a minute.
You've got it. Well, anyway, make a long story short, what happened was they did a deliverance on the house, and the house exploded. It was like growling, and it was just, you could hear this almost scream, and the house vibrated, and everybody was shocked. The NYU students, nobody knows what happened to the film, and it got so bad that Father Trebolt told Clara, you got to move because the house wants to kill you. And when we go out there, it never disappoints. I mean, we've heard my friend Joe Piari, who's my partner in crime out there, he's heard stuff. We've had children calling. But the high point was I was coming down those stairs, and I looked down, and there was a girl looking up at me, a teenager. And I described the face to Clara, and Clara said, oh, my gosh, that's my daughter, Laura. And Laura had committed suicide a few years after they had moved out of the house. And, I mean, I saw her for 12 solid seconds. I blinked my eyes. She did not go anywhere.
Wow.
And it kind of even, like, stays with me because that's stuff that, I question everything. And that was one of those things that happened. But it got so bad that they had to leave. She's actually in Washington State, I believe, right now. And it's a very unhappy house. And there's so much attached to it. It's one of those overlaying sad places that when I called my friend Johnny Zaffis about it and went over some stuff, he says that's one of those places that may be sad forever. It could be Indian burials, it could be white burials that were underneath the barn floor that were disturbed. It could be a number of things. All we know is that it's been active since the 1970s.
Wow.
So the story is still out on that one, and we're still investigating that one. And like I say, I mean, a number of us have been pushed, pulled, had hair. Well, if I had hair, but a lot of people got their hair pulled. I got scratched across the arm. It took a while for
crazy.
It to for it to heal. Yeah, so it was one of those really nasty, nasty cases.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more about it, Tim, but unfortunately we're out of time. And when I mean we're out of time, we're out of time. We got to make way for Revenant Radio, which is coming up in about a minute. So thank you, Tim, for coming on. Amy, great guest.
Thank you very much, Timmy.
We appreciate it. We're going to have to get you back
love
on,
you
Tim.
Guys. Love you guys.
Love you too, man.
Love you too.
We'll talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.
Have a great Bye-bye. Night. And sorry to cut Tim short on that, but we are out of time. We got to make way for Revenant Radio, which is coming up next. Next week on the show, Amy Perry, Paranormal News. Folks, thanks for tuning in tonight to the Malevolent Haunting Show. For Lon, for Amy, for Sean, and for the Reverend Tim Shaw, I'm Eric Altman. You guys have a great night, and we'll catch you again next Sunday night right here on Beyond the Edge Radio.
Join us for another live edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, Sunday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern on the Para-X Radio Network. Archive shows are available on Podomatic, Parapods, iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Para-X Radio Network, or our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. To contact Eric, Juan, or Sean, email us at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on the Para-X Radio Network.